episode 645, for September 22nd, 2020. Goddamn, How Real Is This? By Jaretta Lau. Read by Andrea Bang. Rated R. And welcome to Podcastle. I'm Jen Albert, Podcastle's co-editor and your host today. I hope you're all keeping well at home and taking care of yourselves. We're so happy that we can be here for you every single week. I'm very happy to introduce this week's story. It's one I've wanted to run for a while. I first read Jaretta Lau's collection, How Does a Single Blade of Grass Thank the Sun, when the publishing house that I work for, ECW Press in Toronto, began production on the audiobook. I was absolutely charmed by the collection, which opens with this story, within the first few pages, and I was lucky enough to get to help with the casting and production on the audiobook. When Jaretta asked if we could cast Andrea Bang, a rising star in Canadian television, as narrator, I was so excited. Bang has the perfect voice to capture Lau's caustic wit. Jaretta Lau is a rising star herself of the Canadian literary scene. She's the author of the short story collection, How Does a Single Blade of Grass Thank the Sun?, from Nightwood Editions in 2014, which was shortlisted for the City of Vancouver Book Award, longlisted for the Frank O'Connor International Short Story Award, and was named by The Atlantic as one of the best books of 2014. In 2013, she was a finalist for the Writers' Trust of Canada McClellan and Stewart Journey Prize. She completed an MFA in writing at Columbia University. Her fiction and poetry have appeared in Day One, Event, Grain Magazine, Prairie Fire, Prism International, Rice Paper, Room Magazine, Subterrane, and Zen Monster. Jaretta splits her time between Vancouver and Hong Kong, where she is writing a comedic novel about an inept company struggling to open a theme park about death, and an essay collection about navigating volcanoes, illness, and other enormities on the worst timeline. She's the co-founder of an editorial and marketing services company, Start to Finish Agency. Your reader today, as I mentioned, is Andrea Bang. Andrea Bang was born and raised in Burnaby, BC. She grew up wanting to be a librarian, designer, fairy, teacher, cashier, critic, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, construction worker, and the list goes on. Since they didn't offer a class in vampire slaying, she took the equivalent, a degree in psychology, acting classes, and spewing witty comebacks at objects with no reflection. Outside of acting, Andrea enjoys making things, crafting, sewing, movie making, writing and watching too many films. Some of her work can be seen on Inanimate Funnies. Currently, she's on CBC's Kim's Convenience, which can be seen on Netflix or CBC. Are you ready to get into it? I hope you enjoy the story.
Goddamn, how real is this? My future self sends me a text message at least once a day. The latest. Hey, trickle slut, get your man hands out of our hair. I have a Lake Michigan-shaped bald spot forming on the back of my head. Stop plucking. It's starting to look like a penis. Last I checked, there were no Great Lakes of any sort blooming on my scalp. No Superiors or Hurons or Eries flooding my hair. Of late, these missives from the future have become increasingly more abusive. I wonder, when will I flip my bitch switch and hop on this negative self-talk train? In a week? In a year? I'd like to believe this use of misogynistic language is out of character, and that maybe I'm being trolled by a bored identity thief. I file the thought as something for my present self to discuss with my now therapist. Another message flashes on my phone. That mole on your left arm that you've been ignoring? Get thee to a doctor. I peer down. My arm is presenting itself as blemish-free. At times like this, I wish I could send a text to my future self to make clear the murky. I want to address important issues such as, will I die alone? But that technology hasn't been invented yet. Or our future selves have circumvented its implementation for the good of humanity. I call my local clinic and explain my situation. This is Franny Sue calling. I can't find this mole my future self is warning me about. But I'd like to make an appointment to see Dr. Chang. I understand, says the woman on the phone. Last week, my future self started blasting me messages about herpes. Today, she escalated to drug-resistant gonorrhea. I think she's trying to tell me that my boyfriend is cheating on me. No sex for the hexed, I say, unsure how to handle this kind of intimacy with a near stranger. Come at 2 tomorrow afternoon. Great. See you tomorrow, I say, and hang up. Despite this disruption, I still have time before my therapy session to stop by my ex-colleague Rita's house and check on her. Rita has not left her house in months because her future self keeps divining death and destruction. As soon as she thinks of doing something, innocuous activities such as watching a movie or washing her feet, a new text arrives dissuading her from taking action. I pack up some leftover food and a stack of library books, slap SPF 90 sunscreen on my face and arms, and get on my bike. A block from Rita's, I see that chronology purists have purchased a new billboard. Has communicative time travel ruined your life? Our counselors are ready to talk. I think about calling the number listed, but decide instead to stop at a convenience store to pick up additional supplies. The scene indoors is vaguely apocalyptic. The lights are off. Many shelves gape, emptied of goods. Since the text from the future began arriving 9 months earlier, people have been hoarding canned food and toilet paper out of fear that the new technology has sparked end times. I sigh. Spoiler alert, present-day peons. It's our appalling behavior that blights our existence. I grab a loaf of bread and head to the counter. The clerk is wearing a bulletproof vest. What if I shot you in the head? I ask. The vest wouldn't do you much good then.
Do you think you're the first to ask that, smartass? My future self has already pointed that out to me, thank you very much, he says.
How does the store stay afloat without the scratchin' winds? I ask, motioning to the bare strip of space under the plexiglass countertop. 3 months ago, the government suspended all forms of gambling. I miss the surprise of running a toonie across a scratch card. That sick joy of self-inflicted failure that's preceded ever so briefly by hope. That will be $10, please, he says, pointing to the bread. I reach Rita's house and speak through the front door. Hey, I'm leaving you some gazpacho. The ingredients are organic. I triple-filtered the water. There's also a loaf of gluten-free bread and the books you asked for. No answer. The smell of feet lingers in the air. Just send me a text, I say. My phone pings with a message from present Rita. Thanks, Franny. There's $20 for you under the doormat and a book that needs to be returned. Your recent actions are fashioning me into an enabler, I say, stooping down to look under the mat. I don't like who I am becoming under your influence. No answer. I text her. Your future self is Chicken Little. Your future self has become your mother. No response. I move on. My therapist, Kelly, does not have a cell phone. She's a chronology purist. She wants her life to play out exactly as it would have if communicated time travel had not been invented. I don't get how this is possible, given that the timeline has already been breached. But logic is not my strong suit, so maybe I'm missing the point. Sometimes her future self tries to get in touch with her via my phone. But present Kelly has instructed me never to pass on any information. I'm in the uncomfortable position of knowing that the majority of her stocks will tank in the next 6 months. Though, I suppose if I do pass on the information, it would be classified as insider trading. I keep my mouth shut. We both stay out of jail. I wonder if I should look for a new therapist. How is your week? Kelly asks. I worry that I am a misogynist, I say. My future self is really fond of calling me a slut or a whore, which I find puzzling because I never use either of those words. I'd be much more likely to refer to myself as a douchebag. What at present do you think is causing this negativity? I don't know. I'm frustrated with the fact that I can't communicate with my future self. I mean, I guess I could leave notes for her in my journal, but I don't know if she'll ever see them. What can you do right now that will make you feel better? I guess I could write a letter to myself, and you can give it back to me 6 months later. Okay, do you want to try that this week? Yes, I say. Our time is up, she says, standing. Until next week. As soon as I leave the office, a new message arrives from my future self. Hey, Ricketts Breath, have you taken your calcium and vitamin D supplement today? I hit delete. Kelly's future self is angry with me. I'm going to have to raise my fees to cover my losses, so you're the one who will suffer if you don't tell me to sell the stock. I decide to write two letters. One to my future self, and one to Kelly's. The next day at the doctor's office, the waiting room is a cacophony of phones beeping and bleeping. Everyone looks anxious. I know now that ignorance is Eden. If I knew how to code a virus, I would direct my future self to send the inventor of communicative time travel a diseased email to avert this reality. I text Wilson to meet me at 2:30 at a coffee shop across from the clinic. I need someone to talk to in case I have terminal cancer. And he replies with an immediate affirmative. The receptionist, who does not look ill, calls my name and leads me to a private room. Dr. Chang appears after a few minutes. He examines my arm and says, "Do you think that maybe, and I don't want to sound judgmental, that your future self suffers from a touch of Munchausen by proxy?" "What makes you say that?" "You've been here 7 times during this past month. You complain of future ailments, but in actuality, they're merely imaginary diseases foisted upon you by your future self. I read somewhere that the child is the father of the man." I say, "Are you still pulling your hair out? Did my future self contact you about that?" "Yes." "I'm sorry we have no boundaries," I say. "Also, isn't my condition just Munchausen? I mean, I'm still me, even in the future. No proxy." Dr. Chang gives me a look that indicates that he is the medical professional and I am just a poor excuse for a patient. I leave his office in shame. My diagnosis? Dormant Munchausen by proxy. Wilson is late for a meeting at the coffee shop. My hand wanders to my tresses. My phone pings. "Horbeg, place your man hands where I can see them or I'll shoot." I sigh and fold my hands in my lap. The last thing I need is for my future self to become suicidal and send an assassin my way. 15 minutes, 3 hairs, and 4 text messages later, Wilson rolls in on a skateboard. "Konnichiwa," he says, kissing me on the cheek. "Nice dress." Those wheels become less and less an acceptable form of transportation with each passing calendar year, I say to him. "I broke up with Cynthia," he says with a shrug. "I live for today." 2 months ago, Wilson's future self went silent. No texts or email. He concluded that his future self was dead. So his motto became, "Carpe diem." He made a bucket list, which included things such as climb Mount Everest, learn Japanese, and eat yogurt for the first time ever. Everest was a bust. Summit, avalanche. And he's lactose intolerant. I suspect this list could be the reason for his early demise. But I haven't said anything because I don't want to be a killjoy. "Did you get a haircut?" I ask. "I did. That's why I was late. So how did your appointment go?" "My doctor says I have dormant Munchausen by proxy, but I think it may just be plain Munchausen. Since I'm doing it to myself," I say. There's now a hold on my insurance for a month, and I can only seek medical help in life-or-death situations. Also, Rita still won't leave her house.
Forget your troubles. I'm here.
Come to the park with me, Wilson says, grabbing my hand.
Is there a cliff you want to jump off?
Something like that.
Better, actually.
Also, I stopped drinking coffee, and I don't like the way they serve tea here.
What's better than jumping off a cliff?
I ask.
You'll see, he says, smiling.
We leave on our separate vehicles. I reach the park first. Wilson shows up with a fresh bruise on his arm.
I fell,
he says. I wish my future self were alive so he could send warnings. Everyone is afraid to live now, I say. You should be thankful for the radio silence.
I'm nearly done everything on my list. There's only one thing left.
What is it? I ask. He points to something in the trees. I gaze up in search of this final thing, sure that I'm about to witness some new kind of beauty. But I don't see anything. When I look back at Wilson, his face has traveled and is inches from mine. He kisses me. I close my eyes and think only of the present. We separate. He smiles. I feel the same way about you, too, I say. His phone pings. A look of surprise lights up his face.
It's a text from my future self.
You magnificent bastard, it reads. I'm glad you stopped being a scared little pansy and chose to live life. Don't fuck this up for us.
I love her. He turns off his phone, but not before I glimpse the rest of the message.
Tell her to get that mole on her left arm checked.
And welcome back. What would you text yourself from the future? Health information? Motivational messages? Dating advice? Stock tips? I bet we all would have liked to give ourselves a heads up on this year anyway. I would definitely be passive-aggressively texting the me of a day or two ago to tell her to stop procrastinating. Like the main character in Love Story, I suspect many of us wouldn't be very kind to our younger, more naive versions. Maybe we would be better off resisting the temptation after all. If you love this story, please check out the rest of the collection. How Does a Single Blade of Grass Thank the Sun? By Nightwood Editions. It's fabulous. You can find the links in the show notes. A huge thank you to Nightwood Editions, the original publisher of this book, for rights to the text on the website. And a shout out to the ECW Audiobook Program. ECW Audio is the largest audiobook program in Canada, and they are passionate about bringing the best Canadian stories out in accessible formats, and are committed to Own Voices casting. They kindly allowed us to run this sample from the audiobook, which you can find in a link in the show notes as well. It's a great book, there are two fabulous narrators, and every story is just as good as this one. If you like what you heard here as well, please head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/EAPodcasts, and subscribe. If you're strapped for cash right now, we'd be grateful for support in other ways. Talk about our stories on social media, leave us a review on iTunes, or review us in your own online spaces. Those kinds of reviews mean a ton to us. Well, that was our show for this week. On behalf of everyone at Podcastle, our audio engineer, Peter Baravesh, our forum moderator, Aussie Cat, your usual host and assistant editor, Setsu Uzume, myself and my co-editor, Sheree Clark, along with our fantastic first readers, Matt Dovey, Aidan Doyle, Amelia Harrington, Kai Hudson, Craig Jackson, Julian K. Jarbeau, Devin Martin, Catherine McMahon, Hamilton Perez, Eleanor Wood, Tierney Bailey, Sophia Barker, Shamari Kirkwood, Sri Krishna Prasad, Zeev Woodies, and Caitlin Zivanovich. Thanks for letting us share another story with you. We've got to fly, but we'll be back next week with another tale. See you soon! Podcastle is a part of Escape Artists Incorporated and is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. Feel free to share it, but don't sell or change it.